It's a Team Scam edition of the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the show. Hope you're ready for an hour of awesome fantasy baseball talk. We got plenty of your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We got some combos to talk about and the dreaded sophomore slump. Scott White.
Pizza pretzel? Are those the combos we're talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, that's... I didn't know what to do about that because I've made that reference on the Fantasy Football podcast. We've done combos before, and I've said that I think combos growing up were one of the worst snacks that I had. I hated them. They were disgusting. That cheese in the middle of the combo is revolting, Scott White.
You know what was gross?
What?
Handy snacks.
No, I loved handy snacks. But you
remember handy snacks?
They were gross, but I did love them.
And then, I don't even know... That was supposed to be cheese, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
I like the stick, the little plastic stick thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's fun. And I love Dunkaroos, right? Everybody loves Dunkaroos.
I don't think I ever had Dunkaroos until adulthood, but, you know, they're pretty good.
If anybody out there listening to this podcast prefers the vanilla or the white chocolate, whatever it was, Dunkaroos over the chocolate, like, I don't want to be friends with you. It's a no. It's such a clear decision that the chocolate was better than the vanilla. So clear. Anyway, Scott, sophomore slump. Can I ask you, unprepared, top of your head, is there one player that you're worried about with the sophomore slump? And here are the best rookie OPS, the rookie OPS leaders from last year, if this helps. Aaron Judge. We don't really consider him sophomore slump, but Aaron Judge, Rhys Hoskins, Matt Olson, Bellinger, Jesse Winker, Jose Martinez, DeJong, Haniger, Happ, Mancini, Devers, Gurriel.
You know, there aren't a lot of sophomores that are being drafted high. Obviously, there's Judge and Bellinger. But beyond that, who's the highest sophomore that's going to get picked?
Hoskins.
Hoskins?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, I've seen him go as late as like round seven. So, you know, as much as I love Hoskins, he's the one I probably fear it for the most, just because, you know, good play discipline, sure, but in terms of success on contact, it was mostly just the home runs.
Yeah.
And you know, it was such a whirlwind there the final 2 months of the season. Like I don't think we got a really good read of what type of player he's going to be in the majors. I think he's going to hit for power. I think he's going to get on base a fair amount. I've said before, I think he's going to be a lot like Edwin Encarnacion was, but we're you know, sometimes he goes as early as round four. And that's kind of banking on him being that already. So I guess he's the one I'm most concerned for, just in terms of the, you know, I don't really have a good reason why I think he's going to slump, except for we haven't seen a lot from him. That's, now, Judge,
yeah. Rhys
Hoskins. We talked about Judge before, and there's mm-hmm. other reasons to think he's going to take a step back. But even those, I mean, I think you're still talking about second, third round value from him.
Yeah. All right. So that's Rhys Hoskins is the one that Scott called out. He'll be 25 years old in March. And yeah, only 46 strikeouts. Well, that's actually a lot in 50 games. But keep in mind, he had 14 strikeouts in August. He had 29 in September and 3-1 game in October. So the strikeouts increased as the year went on for Hoskins. I guess I would nominate Matt Olson because I feel like the only, well, he walked. He did walk. 22 walks in 59 games. Nothing like Hoskins, 37 walks in 50 games. But the only thing Olson really does is homer and get on base. So he doesn't have much to fall back on, I guess.
There's like a, you know, 7 to 9 round difference in where you're drafting Olson versus Hoskins, which, you know, if for where you draft him, if Olson has a sophomore slump, I don't think it's going to be a big deal for you. So that's why that's why I was asking, what sophomores are we really drafting high enough to worry about a sophomore slump? And I don't think there's that many.
I agree that, you know, you take Matt Olson, I don't know, I'll throw out around 13th round or something like that, maybe a little later. You can afford a bust in the 13th round. The only problem with that argument is that there are a lot of really good players at his position that are going to be drafted around then. And you have to decide if you want Olson over Josh Bell and Greg Bird and Justin Bour. And you could make the wrong decision and really screw your team, Scott.
Well, what's preventing a sophomore slump for Josh Bell?
No, nothing. He wasn't even on here. His OPS wasn't even in the top 12 among rookies. Sophomore slump's a little bit tricky because some of those guys had at bats the year before and kept their rookie eligibility. So it's a tricky topic. We'll get into it.
It's trippy too.
It is trippy.
Yeah.
Why is this team Scam? In case you're not familiar, combination of our names, Scott and Adam, and Heath and Chris are Team Creef. So this is a Scam episode. Heath is out. Chris is doing some other stuff. But still, Chris is the man right now. I was nervous when we finished that podcast on Wednesday, the MLB Team Preview podcast. I was like, I don't know. I'm not sure how good it was. I don't know how the listeners are going to respond to it. They loved it. They loved it. I don't remember getting that kind of feedback about an episode.
That was actually Team Haddam.
That was Team Haddam.
Heath and Adam were the concerned parties there, and I was like, guys, it's going to be great.
Oh, no, but it was Chris's idea. That's what I was going for.
That was Chris Towers' idea.
And then I read something on the website yesterday that was great. It was a transcript of a chat between you, Heath, and Chris about several topics. Paul Goldschmidt, Heath having Mike Trout fourth.
Yeah, we were discussing early round hitters in a very informal, basically just a peek into a Slack conversation between Heath, Chris, and I.
I loved it. I really did. It was awesome. Great read and quick read, really easy stuff. So just a great way to get more acquainted with some of the stats and some of the ideas that we have about these elite hitters. Take a look on cbssports.com/fantasy. Scott, not a lot of news and notes today, but we might not get a pitch clock this year. I think we should hold off on talking about the pitch clock until we actually have concrete news, and we'll go from there.
It really sounds like we're not going to now. If Manfred isn't forcing it down the players' throats, I don't know why they're suddenly going to invite it back. So we're not having a pitch clock under the threat of, if you guys don't bring the game time down, there will be an even shorter pitch clock next year. So
yeah. I'm all about them bringing the game time down, whatever
you
can do.
A boss move from Manfred there.
Scott and I agree on this. The best thing to do in baseball would be to not eliminate shifts, but I think you agree with me on this. I will speak for you. I don't think they should allow more than like two players on the infield on one side of the second base.
Yeah.
Oh, right. You do agree. Great.
Yeah, no, I do agree. Which eliminates the extreme shifts we've been seeing the last few years.
Right.
Just seems simple. Make a rule where there's second base. Two infielders have to be on one side. Two infielders have to be on another. It doesn't seem like it's, that to me is not as fundamental of a change as imposing a clock on a game that famously has never had clocks.
There you go. All right, fair enough, and let's get into it with the emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This is from Luke in Canton. Dear Carlos, Danny, and Corey.
Those sound like Cleveland Indians pitchers, Carrasco, Salazar, and Kluber.
Okay. With the news of the Humidor, does that drop Paul Goldschmidt for you at all? I am deciding between Goldschmidt and Blackman in a points league as a keeper. Am I giving the Humidor too much credit? And Luke, yeah, you are, because we don't know that there will be a Humidor, right?
Not that I've seen. It's still up in the air. That was actually a talking point in that Slack conversation.
Right.
That's on the website. And my thoughts in there is if there is a Humidor, it's just, like, we have so little data to go on. We just have Colorado, and Colorado is such a loopy environment anyway. That I don't know exactly how to apply what we've learned from their Humidor use there. It seems pretty extreme, the data they've come out with. But the thing about Goldschmidt is he's always been great on the road. And he's good at so many things. He had kind of a power slip 2015. It was still a stud. Or was it 2016?
16. Yeah, 24 homers.
It was still a stud. I just think... Among the concerns you could have about first round hitters, that's among the lower ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Blackman isn't proven to be a first, he hasn't consistently performed at the level he did last year and is old, you know, 31 years old. Harper gets hurt all the time. Stanton has an injury history. Like, there's plenty of reasons to worry about all those first-round hitters, and I think Humidor's pretty low on the list.
Do you see a reason to worry about Mookie Betts?
I kind of feel like last year was a worst-case scenario for Mookie Betts, and though he didn't perform like a first-rounder last year, he performed like a second-rounder.
Right.
So he's among the more worry-free options, sure.
I think the Humidor could be... It would really upset me. I don't want them to have a Humidor.
Me neither.
He has Goldschmidt has a 959 OPS in his career at home and a 904 OPS on the road. 904 OPS is outstanding, but it is 55 points lower than his home OPS. Now you look at 2015, a 33 homer season for Paul Goldschmidt. He hit 20 of them on the road. In 2013, he hit 17 home runs on the road, 13 at home. So there have been examples of him hitting for more power on the road. But typically the batting average is better at home and the OPS is better at home. And then Goldschmidt, here's just a cold hard fact about Goldschmidt. He has been the number one first baseman in fantasy in points leagues three straight years. No, in Roto three straight years and number one or number two three straight years in points leagues. So, I mean, it's just that simple. When he had that power dip in 2016, he had a career high 32 steals. I don't think we can expect that. He's probably more like the 18 he had last year, but. He's awesome. He's awesome. I read this email. I started talking myself out of Goldschmidt at three, but then I did the research. I talked myself back into it. Like, he's totally fine at three. But I personally, like, have Trout and Altuve are just no doubters one and two. And then I think there's room for debate after that.
If Heath was here, he'd say there's room for debate ahead of that.
I know. I can't do it. I get it with Turner because he's shortstop eligible and he could steal 60 bases and that's like incredible. But I can't do it over Trout or Altuve.
I think it's prioritizing steals too much. Like, yes, there's the scarcity of them, and yes, there's the risk of you just getting left out of it completely because of that scarcity. But If you're making a halfway conscious effort throughout the draft to feed your steals total, like, you don't really need that many steals to compete in steals because there are so few of them. So it just, yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before, but it just seems crazy of me to be so worried about steals that you're going to pass up Trout for him, like,
sure.
Like Heath would do in his Roto rankings.
And it's not like you don't get steals from Trout.
Yeah, like, right? He's going to give you 20 to 30 himself.
Right. Okay, so next email is from Matt Plenalp. P-L- he says, you can spell my name, my last name forwards and backwards. It's a palindrome. P-L-A-N-A-L-P. What a strange name, Matt Plenalp from Omaha. I love this, Scott. A lot of responsibility right here. My league says that if you answer this question on the air, we will abide by the pod's decision. Ooh. I'm in a Roto league that's been in existence since the 80s when standings were calculated using USA Today.
Wow.
Each team has two minor league roster spots for players in the CBS game who have yet to throw an MLB pitch or record an MLB at-bat. All right, two minor league spots. Two minor league players can be kept at no cost during the offseason and then a discount in future years. Shohei Ohtani has yet to throw an MLB pitch or record an MLB at-bat. I was the lucky one that added Ohtani minutes after he became available on CBS. Some in the league say that Ohtani should go to auction because he's not an actual MILB minor leaguer. Our league constitution written by attorneys is silent on the issue. Should I be allowed to keep Ohtani or should he go to auction for the entire league? Scott, your decision is final.
Well, here's what I have to ask. If this league's been around with the 80s, you've dealt with this situation a number of times already, right? Ichiro Suzuki, Hideki Matsui.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who's come over from Japan or Cuba, Jose Abreu, like, they've technically been rookies. They've been eligible for Rookie of the Year. And I could understand why you'd make a special exception for them that MLB doesn't and say they're not really rookies. I feel like you should have already dealt with that by now. And in this case, I feel like there should probably be a better way to decide who gets the player in the first place than just who happens to be sitting on the site the moment he becomes available in the CBS database, you know?
Right.
But that ship has obviously sailed.
I think Scott's
got a great
point.
You know what?
I guess
it hasn't sailed because they're saying they want him to go to auction.
Some do. Well, Scott has a great point. Use precedent if you can. If you can't,
if you can use precedent, if you, nobody remembers or or like it just it. I don't know. I feel like somebody should remember what happened.
I have a really hard time putting Ohtani in a minor league spot. It just doesn't feel right to me. Like, I kind of feel
there
like
there is no precedent. If you can honestly find no precedent for how this has been handled before, then I think it's just hard to know. If you say, okay, we're going to put him to auction, it's hard to know exactly where to draw that line. It seems like a judgment call every time somebody signs from a foreign league. And that's kind of icky. But I would say,
what do you say?
I don't know. I feel like there probably should be a better way to disseminate these minor leaguers than this anyway. Maybe have like a minor league draft before the actual draft. Like maybe that should be the start of a new precedent. And then these players could be eligible for it. And there wouldn't be any judgment calls to be made.
All right. Since Scott won't make the tough call, I'll do it for you. I think that if there is no precedent, then he should go to auction. And I'm sorry.
Sorry,
palindrome.
Hopefully there's a precedent. There really should be. This is not an unusual thing by now.
All right, this is Mark in Peoria, Illinois. Dear Aramis, Derek, and Alfonso, 2008 Cubs, what are your thoughts about Eugenio Suarez's chance to replicate his breakout numbers from last year? The big bump in OBP and walk percentage for Eugenio Suarez gives me encouragement, and I like Suarez as a mid-round third base or middle infield option. I don't know that he'd be a middle infield option. I think he made one appearance at shortstop. But certainly he's a third baseman. Suarez, 26 years old, number 12 in points, number 13 in roto at third base last year. And, he did. He had an incredible OBP. Well, 260 batting average, 367 OBP at an incredible walk rate, and a 461 slugging with 26 home runs and 4 steals. For Suarez, Scott, do you like Eugenio Suarez as a mid-round pick?
I don't see much reason to be skeptical of what he did last year. I don't see much reason to think there's room for improvement either, and that's really the problem. Now, if he is middle infield eligibility, I suppose that changes the equation a bit. But I'm looking at fantasy points per game. I don't know if your league's a points league, but points league is theoretically Suarez's better format since he does walk and isn't really a standout in batting average or stolen bases. So head-to-head points per game, I see Arenado, Bryant, Machado, Jose Ramirez, Rendon, Donaldson, Turner, Bregman, Moustakas, Shaw, Devers, Beltre, Sano, Nunez, Lamb, Seager.
Really?
Like, there's at least 15 third basemen who average more head-to-head points per game than Suarez last year. Even with these numbers, you're kind of skeptical of him repeating. So I don't see how that's a middle-round pick. That sounds like a late-round pick.
Yeah. All right. I mean, probably better in OBP, but also you better hope he doesn't get traded because Suarez had a 978 OPS at home, 693 on the road. And of course, he is in a good park. And Paula in New York. And this is an interesting one with the Gerrit Cole trade. We lost Brad Peacock as a Sparp. So Paula wants to know who the best Sparps are this year. And it is not a good looking year right now for Sparps, Scott White.
Yeah, Peacock was far and away the best, and I am still treating him as that because I think just the way the Astros are known to handle their rotation, he will make 20-plus starts this year, Peacock, with different options at the back end of that rotation moving in and out. So he's probably second highest on the list for me, but I have Mike Minor as the number one. He signed to be a starter for the Rangers after a great rebound season with the Royals as a turned into a dominant reliever. But you know, going back a few years to like the 2013, 2012, he was looking like a top 30 fantasy starter for the Braves and then had some shoulder issues. So I think he could get back to being that. Just a late round flyer for me. So Mike Minor, Peacock's up there still. Mike Montgomery, assuming the Cubs don't bring in another starter, would probably be third on my list.
Would you take Mike Montgomery or Edwin Diaz
in a points league?
Yeah, always.
That's
a points
really
league.
Where this matters,
right?
I have Diaz higher. I have Diaz significantly higher.
All right, would you take him? Would you take Mike Montgomery or Brad Brock?
I would take. That's closer. If Brock was going to be the guy all year, it'd absolutely be Brock. But obviously, Zach Britton is expected to return midseason, so you're not talking about a long-term closing solution there. I think I still lean Brock.
Okay, last one, because you said Kelvin Herrera could be a bust for the Royals. Would you take Kelvin Herrera or not Mike Montgomery, but Mike Minor, who you have ahead of him?
Oh, definitely Minor. And actually, I think I have Montgomery ahead of him, too. And I'm forgetting one. I have him ranked among all relievers just one spot ahead of Montgomery, and that's Robert Stevenson of the Reds, who has walk issues, but showed signs of turning the corner the last couple months last year.
All right, that's it for this first round of emails. We'll get to more a little bit later. Again, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. That is the letter I, not the word. All right, we're getting a lot of emails. Just remember, I can't read all of them on the air. Can't even come close to that. Just I appreciate your patience. I know I can't get back to everybody. Feel free to tweet us at CBS Scott White. I am at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. Heath is at Heath Cummings Sr., actually, at Heath Cummings S-R. And Chris is at C-Tower CBS. We've got other podcasts for you. Please go to cbssports.com/podcast, singular, and check out all of what we've got for you. And really good stuff. We got a great wrestling/MMA/boxing podcast called In This Corner. That's getting very popular on iTunes and is killing it right now. We've got the Pick 6 podcast with your Super Bowl coverage. Jason Lock and Fora, Pete Prisco, Will Brinson, Nick Costos on that one. We've got an awesome college basketball podcast, Eye on College Basketball with Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander. I won't go through everything, but the last one I'll tell you about is our DFS podcast. So we don't do a ton of DFS on this show, a ton of FanDuel and DraftKings and Draft app. But we do on the DFS podcast, which is the Sportsline DFS podcast. Heath is on that every day with Mike McClure. I am on it occasionally. I think I'll probably be on more during baseball season. But right now it's mostly basketball plus golf. And we had a Super Bowl edition yesterday. Scott, are you involved in the thing that is sweeping the nation, the craze that is sweeping the nation right now, the HQ trivia game?
I am not. I am usually left out of crazes, Adam, and this is one I am happy to stay out of.
Why? It's so fun. I'm so into it.
Oh, they're mining data. You sign up for that app, they're mining your data. And for what? So you could maybe win, I don't know,
$18? Last night the winners had $6.19 each.
Oh, wow. Oh, boy.
They're mining my data? What does that mean, they're mining my data?
They're mining. They're finding all your personal info. They are not. They're building a profile on you. They're absolutely doing that.
I like it, and 1.1 billion people like it every weeknight. And then I don't know. I haven't done the afternoon round, but it's fun. All right, Scott. Let's do some combos. So I actually put these to Twitter polls as well. So we'll see what the people want. Do you want? I'm going to give you a shortstop in both of these. Do you want Bryce Harper and Francisco Lindor? Or Carlos Correa and Freddie Freeman. So it's Harper and Lindor, or Correa and Freeman. Who do you want?
I actually want Correa and Freeman here, because I feel like Freeman is a first-round caliber bat, has proven it 2 years over, who just doesn't fit in the first round, just gets pushed out. And among the early first-rounders, Harper is the one who concerns me the most, just because there have been, you know, two of the last 3 years, right? Well, really back-to-back years, right?
With injuries,
He's kind of let you down. I mean, in a big way 2 years ago, and then last year he was going fine, but then missed a couple months, the last couple months of the season.
He's only had one season where he hasn't let you down in his career, Bryce Harper, right?
Yeah. Now, I mean, there's something to be said for, well, if he's producing like he did last year on a per-game basis, two-thirds of a season, I mean, he's still an elite outfielder, and that's true. But I think his style of play is kind of invites injury, I feel like.
You know what? I do want to bring this up about Harper, though. It is a contract year, and not just a contract year, but he's about to sign probably the biggest contract in baseball history, if Machado doesn't, but I think he will. I like that. I like that for him. And I know some people don't think that matters. Sometimes it's mattered in the past. Sometimes it hasn't. I like it for Harper. I think he's looking for a $400 million contract.
And you think he's just going to do the Rod Tidwell thing?
I don't know, man. I just He's definitely risky. Here's a strange thing. Freddie Freeman, right? So last year, he got hurt.
Yeah, he got hurt too. I mean, that's
but he was
worth bringing up.
He was incredible last year. But 2 years ago, Freeman hit 302 with 34 homers and 91 RBIs, which is a little low, the 91 RBIs. 302, 34 homers, 91 RBIs. Awesome year. He was only the number 14 hitter in points, number 20 in Roto. Kind of strange. A lot of
last
strikeouts.
Year?
No, 2 years ago. A lot of strikeouts that year, and he really improved that last season. Lowest strikeout rate of his career.
Yeah. Well, that was, I think that was, you know, that season only reflected half the breakout. It only reflected the second half. I think he proved last year that he can be that second half version over a full season. And so that's, I mean, that's basically as good as Harper. And then the other half of this is just, I think Correa is first of all better than Lindor.
Yeah.
And second of all, more reliably elite than Lindor.
All right. Well, guess what, Scott?
Yes.
We lost the Twitter poll because I would rather have Freeman and Correa too. Harper and Lindor, 59% of the vote. And Freeman and Correa, 41% of the vote.
That's pretty close, though.
Don't have a 59 to 41. That's not that close.
That's pretty close. It could be like 80 to 20.
So only one of them was a real blowout. So I posted this only about, an hour ago. So I don't have that many votes yet. But here's our next one. Which combo do you want, Scott? Chris Sale and Cody Bellinger or Chris Bryant and Jacob DeGrom? Do you go for the elite pitcher here or the more proven hitter? Sale and Bellinger or Bryant and DeGrom?
I think I would.
I know this is a close one. This is 52% to 48% in favor of Sale and Bellinger right now on Twitter.
Well, because my head, and in this scenario, my rankings will represent my head. I feel like they're saying one thing. Like, my rankings would tell me to do Bryant and DeGrom. But I'm kind of feeling like Sale is the bigger upgrade over DeGrom than Bryant is over Bellinger. So I'm kind of feeling Sale Bellinger.
I was going to go with Bryant and DeGrom, but I've always been like a man crush on Jacob DeGrom kind of guy. I love DeGrom, and he had 239 strikeouts and 201 and a third. I actually think DeGrom is a little similar to Chris Sale. Like, in the past, you've looked at Chris Sale's ERA and been like, how? How is it so high? And then finally, I don't think he had ever been better than 10th at starting pitcher, maybe 8th. And finally, last year, Sale broke out. I think that could be coming for DeGrom. And I worry about a sophomore slump for Bellinger. Still having a really good year, but not like an elite year. So I would go Bryant and DeGrom, but I totally get Sale and Bellinger.
No, those are fair points. I understand where you're coming from. I think Bryant DeGrom is probably the safer combo, and Sale and Bellinger is the upside combo.
All right, let's go to the third one here. You want a catcher? I'm going to give you two options here. Would you want Gary Sanchez and Miguel Cabrera, or Wilson Contreras? So a little worse than Sanchez, but Jose Abreu, a little better than Miguel Cabrera. So you've got Gary Sanchez and Miggy, or Wilson Contreras and Jose Abreu?
I will go with Sanchez and Cabrera.
This is another close one, another nail biter on Twitter. 52% say Sanchez and Miggy. And 48% say Wilson Contreras and Jose Abreu.
That's as cool. And what was the last one? I don't remember.
Also 52 and 48.
Okay. In favor of Sale Bellinger?
Bellinger over Bryant and DeGrom.
Okay.
Yeah. It's cool. I mean, look, I did take Sanchez and Miguel Cabrera in the last head-to-head points league draft we did. Sanchez in round 3, and Cabrera was, I think, round 5, maybe round 6.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a difference do you think there is between Gary Sanchez and Cody and Wilson Contreras? On a per at bat basis, it wasn't much different last year. That's just last year.
Maybe it wasn't on a per game basis. There was a huge difference, and I think the distinction is notable because of the way Joe Maddon employs his lineup. Like Sanchez, I feel like, especially now that, you know, Matt Holliday isn't there, they don't really have like a dedicated DH. Oh, you know what? Actually, they do.
They do. They do. They have the four outfielders.
It's probably going to have to be one Judge or Stanton most every day. So scratch that argument. But I feel like Sanchez will be more reliably behind the plate for the Yankees than Contreras will for the Cubs, and a lot of those at bats for Contreras will come as a substitute.
You know, I never thought about that. Looking at the Stanton trade as a downgrade for Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
Right?
This moment.
And now look, so the reason is we all thought that Sanchez would get some DH at bats. I thought he, you know, would, if not lead the position in plate appearances, come very close, and he still might. But they got to keep him. They got to keep him in the lineup. So they could go with. They have four outfielders. They have Gardner, Hicks, Stanton, and Judge. Mm-hmm. They could play Gardner in center field and try to get Judge or Stanton in left field and use them as both corner.
I imagine that'll happen some.
Right.
That'll happen some. I don't think Hicks will play literally every day. I think Gardner will get days off. He's in his mid-30s. And so there's still Sanchez started 18 games at DH last year. So it's not like it's not like he's needing to do it twice a week or anything to meet last year's expectations.
Right. And the other side of it, the other part of it is the first baseman. And I was just so enticed by Miguel Cabrera. I got burned by Jose Bautista last year because I was taking Bautista in sort of a similar spot. I thought he would bounce back. And boy, he was terrible. I'm not ready to say that Miguel Cabrera is done. He's younger than Bautista was, and he's 1 year removed from being unbelievable. So I'm so enticed by a Sanchez Miguel Cabrera combo.
That's the thing. If Cabrera does bounce back, that is you got the best catcher in fantasy, and clearly, somebody who's at least as good as Jose Abreu, and possibly even better.
Yeah.
And yeah, between the fact that Cabrera was playing with, I think it was a hip injury all of last year. And the fact that he still had a great contact profile. I think there's plenty of reason to think he could bounce back.
I don't think he DH'd much, but they need to start making Miguel Cabrera the DH. Sorry, Victor Martinez. It's time to make Miguel Cabrera the DH again. All right, last one. George Springer and Robbie Ray, or Justin Verlander and AJ Pollock. This is a runaway right now on Twitter. It's an outfield downgrade for a pitcher upgrade. So it's Springer and Robbie Ray, or Pollock and Justin Verlander. Who do you want, sir?
I feel like the answer is going to depend on your confidence level in Justin Verlander. Because if you, like me, think he's basically what his final numbers the last 2 years show, that he's, one of the few aces out there, somebody who will give you the big strikeout totals in 200-plus innings. Robbie Ray, what did he have, 160 innings last year? There's a lot of reason to be excited about Robbie Ray, but there's reason to wonder if, A, he was as good as he was last year, and B, if he'll ever be as good as Verlander. So, obviously Springer is better than Pollock, but Pollock does some things well that steals are hard to find, and in theory he should be a good source of batting average too. So I'm leaning Verlander Pollock here.
Verlander Pollock. Well, the people on Twitter think you're an idiot. They say Springer and Robbie Ray with 72% of the vote. The tough part, for you, the tough part is evaluating Verlander.
I just happen to know that, it seems like the general population doesn't like Verlander as much as I do, and that's been the case for a couple years now.
And for me, the tough part is evaluating Robbie Ray, because he still walks everybody. He had a really low BABIP last year, didn't give up a ton of hits. So I see so much... so many possible outcomes for Robbie Ray, including you're dropping Robbie Ray by midseason, or he's top three in the Cy Young. I feel like Robbie Ray, just because he's so extreme with strikeouts and with walks, is one of the most extreme pitchers in terms of possible outcomes. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I feel that way. I mean, one of the reasons I liked him to break out last year is because the BABIP was so high, but he kind of swung it the other way. With similar peripherals other across the board. So, yeah, I don't know if he's going to take the middle ground between his last two seasons. I mean, some of the individual game strikeout totals for Ray last year were just ridiculous, and so that leads me to wonder if he has upside beyond even what we saw last year, as low as the BABIP was. But yeah, I do see a scenario with the walks and with, you know, the fact that he did have such a low BABIP last year, like you said, where, you know, it's not outside the realm of possibility. We're just dropping him midseason because he can't get out of his own way. Like, it's not a likely scenario, but it's among the scenarios.
Robbie Ray was the number 13 starting pitcher last year in points leagues, and I probably don't have enough time to look up where he was in Roto. It was right around there in Roto. I think it was a little worse because his whip was kind of high. Nope. I'm looking at projections. This is a real dud of a research segment here, Scott. Let's just say he was around 12th in both formats and get on with our day. Which brings us to the sophomore slump. How much do you buy into it just in general?
As this kind of like unquantifiable specter looming over every second year player,
right?
I've gotten burned by it enough that I buy into it to some degree. Now, I will always favor the numbers over just that year two on a player's profile. Like I'll defer to the numbers, but if it's a close call between a sophomore and somebody more experienced, somebody more proven, I will definitely go with the more proven player.
Is there a difference in draft approach? We talked about the one-hit wonder, one-year wonder, whatever you want to call it, that whole phenomenon earlier this week. And you said you'll take them at a value. Do you feel the same way about sophomore slump, or you don't really have that luxury? Because for the most part, we're talking about higher-end players here. Well, not for the most part, but we are talking about Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger and Rhys Hoskins, guys like that. The one-hit wonders tend to go later.
Yeah, those are the only three. And, you know, I just don't worry about much of anything Bellinger did last year. Like, it just seemed, all the data seems to support what he did. It's exactly what he profiled as in the minors. Like, I just feel fine about Bellinger, and it seems like I'm among the higher ones in the industry on it.
But so, you know, like you bought into Trey Turner last year. You knew that he wasn't going to have the same type of batting average, but you thought, you know, I forgot what your argument was, but he had enough line drives. You thought he'd hit around 300 or something like that.
Yeah, no, his line drive rate last as a rookie in that partial season was among the highest in baseball. Mm-hmm. And then his sophomore season last year, it was one of the lowest in baseball.
It's Trey Turner. And the thing is, as a fantasy player, Turner was amazing, but that's because of the steals. His OPS went down from 937 to 789. And he only played 98 games. He had a respectable slash line, but if he doesn't get the steals, Trey Turner's not really much of a fantasy asset.
Not a first rounder.
Certainly not. But I mean, look, you a guy who hits 284, 338, 451 with like an 18 homer pace, he's not a fantasy asset really. It's you need the steals. So that's kind of setting Trey Turner apart in this argument. None of these guys on this list are base stealers really from last year, the OPS leaders.
No, I mean I could tell you guys who burned me in the past. Eric Hosmer burned me. Brett Laurie. I was drafting Brett Laurie.
Brett Laurie.
I drafted
him
as early as like round three sophomore season, and he was never as good, never close to as good as he was as a rookie.
Right.
I didn't get burned by Carlos Correa because I was scared of the sophomore slump in his situation, and he did take a notable step back his sophomore year. Mm-hmm. But that was Carlos Correa as a first round pick, and so you know more reason to be scared of him then. Mm-hmm. Than what we're seeing with these three players now. Like I said, there's, you know, it's not like I'm confident in all three of Judge, Bellinger, Hoskins. Judge, I don't think should be a first rounder, but there are reasons beyond just the fact he's a sophomore that are leading me to say that.
I guess the concept behind it is adjustments were made and guys struggle. The league catches on to them. Judge is a little bit different than Hoskins. Certainly than Hoskins. He has a lot more MLB experience than Rhys Hoskins. and more than Cody Bellinger, because Judge had, what, like 84 at-bats or something in 2016. Well, he had 27 games in 2016, and started the season with the club, whereas Bellinger was a little bit later than that. So, you know, I don't know if this even applies to Aaron Judge. We think he's going to be worse than he was last year, of course, but I don't know if it would be a sophomore slump situation. That's kind of the tricky part about this.
I mean, that maybe wasn't that kind of going on the start of the second half?
Yeah, that's
kind of adjusting to him.
Or it was the shoulder injury, which he was playing through. He had surgery.
Maybe, yeah. And just to give some other past examples, I mean, Jason Hayward was never as good as his rookie season. I think Buster Posey, just going off memory here, but I think he took a notable step back his second year. Jeff Francoeur, if you want to go further back.
Trevor Story.
Sure.
He's horrible. Yeah. Will Myers is a great 831 OPS as a rookie for Will Myers, 614 the following year.
Well, Puig. Yasiel Puig.
Puig, yep. So it happens, and I do want people to think about it. But it also, just like the one-hit wonder thing, there's J.D. Martinez and Dallas Keuchel where it didn't happen, where, you know, it wasn't just a one-year thing. There are examples of guys who don't slump after a really good rookie season. So it's not a set-in-stone thing. But I guess I'm a little worried about Cody Bellinger. It just seemed like a great year for him. I don't think he's going to be bad, but 39 home runs in 132 games. I don't think he's going to hit 39 home runs in 155 games this year.
I guess maybe the way to think of it is this. Like, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. Like, that was certainly the case in Hosmer, Lowry, Carlos Correa, that he OPS'd like 1,000 coming up as a rookie shortstop. But I don't think, like, Bellinger had a very good year, but nothing about it seems too good to be true to me.
All right, here's one. This is a guy who's going to get drafted as a middle infielder, probably. Paul DeJong. He's 24 years old. He hit 285 with 25 homers in 108 games. 25 homers for a shortstop in 108 games, but 21 walks to 124 strikeouts. And I broke down Paul DeJong's season. He had a 37 game stretch right around the All-Star break. It started just before the All-Star break with a 1050 OPS, 333 batting average, 14 home runs in 37 games. That 37 game stretch out of 108 games basically made his season. Before that, he had a 763 OPS. After it, he had a 732 OPS. So Paul DeJong, you take his 108 game pace, give him 155 games, he would have been the number five shortstop in points leagues. But I do see him as a big-time sophomore slump guy. And, I mean, I think that's just reflected in the walk-to-strikeout ratio. But what do you think about DeJong?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. I think there are enough quantifiable reasons to be skeptical of DeJong that I don't even know that I put him in this category. And he's an interesting player just because it seems like there are there's a big disparity within the fantasy industry about how valuable he is.
Heath loves him, right?
Heath has him ranked much higher than I do, but you know, I didn't really feel like I could put DeJong on my bust list because if you go to Fantasy Pros and see his consensus ranking, it's closer to where I have him. I think there's a lot of Trevor Story in Paul DeJong.
Right. Right.
And I don't mean that in a good way. I mean, yes, I think he'll hit for power, for good power for a shortstop, but there's not a lot else there. And certainly if you're talking about a points league scenario, he walks so little that even as well as he performed last year, it wasn't like he was a standout.
Well, if he had played 155, I don't know what it was on a per game basis.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, on a per game basis, he was 2.84, which was basically what Xander Bogaerts was last year. And we've talked before about how Bogaerts didn't have a great year. It's about what Andrelton Simmons was last year.
What did Bogaerts finish as, like eighth or ninth in shortstop?
He was a starting caliber shortstop, but he wasn't a standout is what I'm saying.
He wasn't, no. He was sixth. He's probably seventh because Machado's not on this list. No,
like, I don't see a better scenario. DeJong delivering a better scenario than he did last year.
Right.
And if that's what his best case scenario looks like, I don't know. I don't see much reason to get excited.
It also reminds me of Rougned Odor. Just horrible plate discipline, and it's just not a good thing. And all right, and then I think one thing that you might want to look at is guys who do a lot of things that even if they do slump at the plate, Trey Turner, a perfect example, and Andrew Benintendi, a perfect example. He went from an 835 OPS to a 766 OPS. It's not good, but 2020 guy, his plate discipline was good. He still was a valuable asset, and even though I would call Benintendi a teeny tiny minor bust from last year, he still was a guy that was worth starting and didn't kill your team like some of these others.
No, I liked Trey Turner's batted ball profile last year. You pointed that out, and I guess I was wrong about that. But one of my arguments for Turner last year, too, was he's good at so many things that he can afford to lose one and still be a stud. And that's exactly what happened. He lost the batting average and was still a stud.
Right.
And though he's not a true sophomore because, you know, he'd gotten so many partial seasons that he wasn't a rookie last year, that's kind of the same argument I'm making for Tommy Pham this year.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Pham doesn't really feel like a sophomore to me.
He's technically not, but yeah. He's 30 years old, which makes him even less so. But.
Right. He's like the quarterback in Necessary Roughness. He's a sophomore. What was his name in the movie? Paul? Was it? The hell was his name? Paul?
I don't know.
You've seen it, right?
No, I just laughed because it sounded like it made sense.
I get.
I got the context of it.
Is it Scott Bakula? I get him and the guy from Charles in Charge. Yeah, that's Scott Bakula. What's Charles in Charge's actor's name? Come on, Scott. Scott Baio. Yeah, no, Scott.
Ah, yes.
Okay.
Well, they're both Scott B's, so I can understand why you mix them
up. Yeah, what was
Scott
Bakula's name?
Scott Bakula was Quantum Leap, right?
Yeah. What was his name in Necessary Roughness? I feel like it was Paul. All right, we're going to look this up, and we're going to read some emails, and here we go. By the way, Rafael Devers probably should have been part of this discussion, but plenty of time to talk about him. Emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This is from Sean. 5x5 head-to-head league. I can keep one of the following. My gut is telling me Benintendi. Benintendi in the 9th, Justin Turner in the 12th, Ender and Ciarte in the 16th.
Benintendi.
Yeah, it's...
Did the effect work there?
No, it did not. It was just Benintendi. You saying...
Ah, I don't know. Somebody messed with these. Oh!
Oh, that's great. Okay, Benintendi it is. Thank you, Scott. And his name is Paul Blake in the movie Necessary Roughness. Jeremy in Canada. That's how he spelled it. Needs Dynasty format advice. Oh, by the way, you're looking to play some Dynasty Fantasy Baseball, you do it on CBSSports.com. You can trade draft picks up to 3 years in advance. We're making a lot of strides. We know fantasy owners want Dynasty Leagues. They want a place to play them. We get that question a lot. CBSSports.com has gotten so much better, so you got to check out the Commissioner product. Jeremy in Canada needs Dynasty advice. 16-team head-to-head points keeper league. How do I deal with quality starts and wins? Our standard format is +5 for a win and -5 for a loss. I am proposing +3 for a quality start, +3 for a win, and keep losses at -5. What do you think, Scott?
It's really hard for me to assess point scoring changes without seeing how it would affect the whole landscape. Because it's just hard to know the unintended consequences of this. I'm a big fan of our standard scoring system, which is 3 points for a quality start, -5 for a loss, but 7 for a win. I mean, 7 versus 3, there's a big difference there. And I can understand you wanting to dilute the impact of a win. I think that's a noble cause. But I just don't know how that changes the whole landscape. So I would definitely experiment with that. I'm not comfortable giving this the go-ahead without seeing what it would do. I mean...
All right, well, maybe I'll compromise and say...
I think you definitely need to have 3 points an inning. If it's 1 point an inning, then no, that's not doing enough to separate the good pitchers from the bad pitchers.
I'll compromise. I don't love +7 for a win when you have +3 for a quality start and -5 for a loss. It doesn't really make sense. I think it values wins too much. So if you don't think plus three for a win is enough, then I think you should. I think that Jeremy in Canada, you should go with plus three for a quality start, minus five for a loss, and plus five for a win.
Which is what they already had, it looks like. They had been doing right. Five for a win, even though the CBS standard is seven.
So just adding plus three for a quality start.
I mean, if they still think wins are too influential, cutting it down 2 points like that, then I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea. Like, I kind of feel like you should dilute the impact of a loss, too, if you're going to do that.
Well,
I know that's not a very good answer.
That's
people
all right.
want.
By the way, I wanted to give out a URL. If you do sign up for a commissioner league on CBS Sports, go to cbssports.com/FBT, as in fantasy baseball today. cbssports.com/FBT. All right, here's an email from Gmail. No name, just says Gmail. Keep four in a 10-team head-to-head league. Don't know if it's categories or points, but so please specify next time. Keep four. Trout, yes. Correa, yes. All right, so keep two. Bumgarner, Jose Ramirez. Posey, no. Judge, Hoskins, Springer. Keep two out of these five. Bumgarner, Jose Ramirez, Judge, Hoskins, Springer. I'll even throw Posey in there just in case I'm wrong, but I'm not.
Ramirez and... very close call between Springer and Judge. If strikeouts are minus a full point instead of the standard minus one half, then I think you definitely go Springer. But otherwise, since it's a shallower format, I think I play for the upside and Judge. And then Trout, Correa, Ramirez, and Judge.
All right, our next email comes from... oh, and again, no name? What's going on here, people? It's probably my fault. Dear Perron, Letterman, and Ortiz. These are David's, and David Perron is apparently a Canadian ice hockey player. David Perron is a Canadian professional ice hockey player. He currently is an alternate captain for the Vegas Golden Knights of the National Hockey League, according to Wikipedia.
I would have gone Coulier, but...
yes. Two-keeper Dynasty League, and I have decided I am keeping Giancarlo Stanton. Do I keep Bellinger or Freddie Freeman? In a dynasty league.
Mm-hmm. Well, Freddie Freeman's about 5 years older than Bellinger. And I think that's enough in a dynasty context to keep him over Freeman. Even though Freeman is certainly better in the present, Bellinger could lap him here at some point in the next couple years. And then Freeman will retire soon after that.
Retire? He's 28. I don't know. He's going to retire anytime soon.
Okay, so...
That's okay. Funny. No,
yeah,
it's...
I'm being kind of liberal with my use of
I think
the
it's
passage
funny.
Of time, but it moves fast, people.
It does.
I'm telling you. Freeman will be retiring before you know it.
Pete from Indianapolis. Dear Peanut Butter and Jelly. That's kind of funny. I'm in a 12-team head-to-head categories keeper league. Which starting pitcher should I keep? 12-team head-to-head categories. Nola, McCullers, or Jordan Montgomery?
Nola.
Yeah. No doubt. James in Kentucky. Dear Crush, Tony Two Bags, Thor, and the mayor of Ding Dong City. So the mayor of Ding Dong City is Travis Shaw. Thor is Syndergaard.
Yep.
Crush is Chris Davis, right?
I think so.
Who the hell is Tony Two Bags? Anthony Rizzo?
Tony Two Bags is...
Are you looking it
Rendon.
Up? Tony Two Bags is, oh, okay, I guess he's Anthony Rendon. Good to know.
That's what Matt Williams called him, apparently.
The Marlins will be the worst this year. What are the chances that Justin Bour doesn't get pitched to at all and significantly improves on his 11% walk rate? Could Justin Bour be a decent value in points in OBP leagues?
Well, 11% is already pretty high. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes higher, but I'm kind of taking the opposite approach here because I mean, the batted ball data and obviously the strikeout to walk ratio looks good for Bour last year. It looks like he's a player who can carry himself. I'm just not convinced that he is because he was, you know, this is not like when the Braves started tearing everything down around Freddie Freeman. We already had a pretty good idea, even before he debuted in the majors, that Freddie Freeman was that kind of, that caliber of bat. And Bour was just kind of this, you know, this presumed to be quadruple A guy who, you know, kept putting up decent numbers and then had a pretty close to great season in a year where everybody was great around him. So this is possible, but it's also possible that it doesn't happen because Boer winds up being not something pitchers should really fear, without any help.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think we should look into, I do, but you last year said that Justin Boer might be taking a quote stud turn. So are you sort of changing your tune because of Boer or because of the Marlins?
Because of the Marlins. It's just like that is going to be such a jarring environment change for Boer.
Yeah.
For a player who, like I said, yeah, there were reasons. There are, just looking at the data, there are reasons to be excited about Boer. There were last year and there are even now. But I just don't know how much of that was being in the same lineup with Stanton, Ozuna, Yelich, and if he's somebody who can really carry himself without that.
Sure. I think we should look at some teams that have been like bottom five in runs scored and see how many great hitters there have been on those teams, great fantasy hitters that don't steal bases. You know, I'm thinking of like Will Myers off the top of my head, but he was kind of a steals guy. All right, something to look into. Here's Thad in Minnesota. Let's see. This is kind of a long one. All right, the question is, there's been a run on starting pitchers. He's in a dynasty draft that's a slow offline draft right now. He has Trout. And in the second round, there's been a run on starting pitchers. The studs, the four studs, then Strasburg, DeGrom, Bumgarner, Greinke, they went in the second round. I have two picks in a row, and the best available bats are Votto, Jose Ramirez, and Springer. But there's also Syndergaard, Severino, and Verlander. So you've got great value here to take, along with Trout, Votto and Jose Ramirez, or Votto and Springer. Or do you go with a pitcher here, Scott, because everybody else has went pitcher? And you know he's got two full rounds before his next two picks. This is about adjusting to runs. I would go one of each. I would probably go Votto and like Syndergaard or something.
I'd go Votto and Severino. You can't pass up Votto if you can get him with Trout. That is not a scenario many fantasy owners will get to experience.
All right, cool.
But yeah, Severino, if you want to make sure you get a high-end pitcher, that would be my choice. But, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with Syndergaard. There's not much separating them.
Last email here is from Matt. He says in his subject line, drink the milk after Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I just drank the milk as I write this. 11-team, 7x7 roto. Pick one. Syndergaard, Robbie Ray, Wilson Contreras, Aaron Nola, or Elvis Andrews. Syndergaard, Robbie Ray, Wilson Contreras, Nola, and Andrews. It's an 11-team, 7x7 roto league with Caper 9, by the way.
Syndergaard.
Okay. Thank you, Scott White. Have yourself a merry little weekend, sir. Who you got in the Super Bowl?
Trevor Shaw!
In the Super Bowl?
Oh, he's not playing? I have the Patriots because, of course, the Patriots are going to win. Of course, Adam. I don't want them to. Don't get me wrong. But I've witnessed that phenomenon firsthand. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. You could argue the Patriots should have lost to the Rams. They should have
lost
to the Seahawks.
Every Super Bowl, Scott. Every Super Bowl.
They should have lost to the Falcons.
Yeah.
They came very close to losing to the Panthers, and it's not like the first Eagles Patriots Super Bowl was a blowout.
No, you know the largest margin of victory for them in a Super Bowl was last year in overtime. 6 points. And that's why I'm excited, because I think, well, I'm not really that excited because I hate the team so much as a Giants fan, but I think every Patriots Super Bowl has been an exciting game. I mean, last year I thought was kind of a crappy game. I know people hate me for saying that. It was two crappy halves of football. but they're always close.
Pins and needles at the end.
I'm sure you were.
The first 43 minutes or whatever it was.
Two wrongs don't make it right. That's how I felt about last year's
43 minutes of game time. Probably
Scott
like
White,
3 hours and 43 minutes of actual time.
We got to get out of here. Take it easy, man. We'll talk to you on Monday or Tuesday. Next week, we might have four shows for you. Everybody enjoy the weekend. See ya.